Well, good afternoon. It's 4:31 and you're listening to KDNK. Welcome to another edition of Valley Voices. I'm your host, Amy Haddon Marsh. Valley Voices is underwritten in kind by Grassroots TV. Joining me today is Chip Cummins, founder of the American Renewable Energy Institute and founder and CEO of Our Day, which is coming up next month in Snowmass. Welcome, Chip Cummins.
Hi, Amy.
It's really nice to have you here.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Yeah. Well, it's the 15th year for Our Day. Congratulations.
Yeah, it's a pretty big milestone for us.
Yeah, I'll say. You've got a great lineup of speakers, films, and much more for this year. But before we get to that, after 15 years, Chip Cummins, what progress have you seen in terms of Our Day's mission?
Well, actually, tremendous progress, Amy. You know, when we started this, I came out of the wind energy sector. And at the utility scale, there was about 4,000 megawatts of installed capacity throughout the entire country. And now I think we've just topped 100,000. And even though, you know, we still are only, we're less than 5% of the national energy mix, that's very significant. Mm-hmm. And so across the entire spectrum, renewables are on the rise. Right. Wind, solar at the forefront, but then, of course, energy efficiency in the built environment,
right,
et cetera.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. How has your own personal mission changed over the past 15 years? I know you've always been passionate about this, but how has your personal mission changed, or has it?
Well, you know, the mission of Our Day and AREI remains the same, and that's the rapid implementation of renewable energy and energy-efficient technologies, mm-hmm, at the speed and scale necessary, mm-hmm, to get the job done,
okay,
to solve the problem.
Okay.
And so I have actually been traveling a great deal the last 5 years, connecting the dots into something that I call the climate constellation,
yeah,
that really is about creating a global matrix, mm-hmm, if you will. You know, the most important day of Our Day is the day everybody leaves. And,
right,
and how do they take the knowledge and the information and the strategic partnerships and the collaborations and then pay it forward to the next important meeting, mm-hmm, event, et cetera, so that we can, in fact, continue to forge the necessary partnerships, whether it's government or it's in the private sector or it's in the public sector, to enact this mission of implementation at speed and scale of, mm-hmm, solution.
Do you think the speed and scale necessary to get the job done is happening?
Well, it depends on where you look. And let's just say that, you know, with 7.5 billion human beings on the planet, running the global techno structure,
mm-hmm,
at an $80 trillion annual GDP, all in 196 countries, is having a devastating effect on the life support systems of the Earth.
Global techno structure.
That's where we have the systems that are so big that there's not any one thing that's the determining factor. So that's all the economies of the world. Mm. That's all of the industries of the world. Mm-hmm. That's all of the, you know, the internet's a great example of a piece of the techno structure. It's a word. You can look it up. And so bigger than the influence of any single one,
okay,
part.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And in aggregate, but the point I'm trying to make here is that when we as a human race are now producing so much greenhouse gas that we've created feedback loops that we simply don't understand,
mm,
and that when the North Pole, as an example, goes 50 degrees above zero Fahrenheit for 2 weeks during the winter solstice, these are really significant indicators that our thermoregulator is off, and we've got to address that. And the only way that we know, and all of the scientists agree except for like maybe 1 out of 1,000, is that we must stop burning the fossil fuels, mm-hmm, that are creating the greenhouse gases, mm-hmm, and everything else,
mm-hmm,
and we must begin to implement at speed and scale, again my favorite two words,
mm-hmm,
The renewable energy solutions along with regenerative soil strategies, along with community-supported agriculture strategy. I mean, there's nothing that's better at sequestering carbon than the earth itself.
Mm-hmm, sure.
You know, what was once oil, coal, and gas is now, you know, this invisible CO2 that's, you know, wreaking havoc. And so I think the good news is that, you know, we're doing it, that it's the greatest wealth creation opportunity that will ever present itself to the human race, fixing the problem that we've created over the last 150 years. But remember, 150 years ago, we only had probably, you know, 1.3 billion
people. Yeah, I was going to say there were a whole lot less people. Really that much less? That much fewer people on the
planet?
You know,
Amy, I will tell you, I'm not going to tell you how old I am, but I will tell you that.
Okay, you and I are probably the same age.
since we were born, okay, the population of the earth has doubled.
Okay. All right. I was born in 55, so.
Yeah, me too. You know,
yeah.
Same age. Double nickels. Got to love those nickels.
That's right. You know, Chip Cummins, I'm going to skip to a question that I planned for later on in the show, but we're sort of approaching that now. We can talk about some of the other questions later. But, you know, you mentioned that the North Pole reached 50 degrees Fahrenheit this winter. I just read where the Rio Grande River has run dry south of Albuquerque. Snowpack is at an all-time low in the Rockies, which is having an enormous effect on the amount of water western states will have this summer. We're facing potentially severe water restrictions in the West, and people are still sweeping dust and leaves off sidewalks with water hoses. You know, I'm still driving an internal combustion engine car. People are still flying in jets from one side of the world to the other. How do you hope to move people out of the overwhelm mode of in the face of a changing planet and loss of animals and plant species to an action mode?
You mean how do we shock ourselves out of deer in the headlights syndrome?
Exactly, exactly.
You know, it's really a tough conversation when nobody wants to get up in the morning and go off to, you know, provide for their family and to put, you know, earn the wages that are going to put their, you know, their kids, their loved ones, you know, through college and to help them make a better life. But when we put the key in the ignition and we contribute our daily dose of each one of us has a carbon footprint to the atmosphere, when we throughput that into the atmosphere, we're actually physically adding our contribution to the problem. So we're going to have to figure out a way to voluntarily stop that. And, you know, I got to tell you a quick story. When I was in Paris and, you know, after that horrible massacre, but they went forward with the Paris COP 21 and the Paris Agreement got signed. And I remember Al Gore and, you know, John Kerry and everybody was jumping up and down and high-fiving. And they were so happy they got it done. And I was sitting in my hotel room, you know, in bed, kind of looking at the TV, you know, in deep depression. I'm like, well, there goes the Kyoto Protocol. There's no mechanisms of enforcement any longer. Right. How are we going to do this? And, you know, and that lasted a while. But then I kind of reorganized my thinking. I went, well, wait a minute. You know, maybe the only way out of this is in terms of a voluntary, every single human being on the planet is going to decide to do this. And maybe the internet and the iPhone and the social media is the connectivity that we have now being presented in order to get the job done. I think that, you know, we've been trying to get a carbon tax for the last 15 years at least. We can't really seem to put a price on carbon, although I will tell some good news to the listeners right now.
All right.
There's something in the budget bill that Trump passed called 45Q. And what that is it's a clause that gives – it was written by the fossil industry for EOR, which is enhanced oil recovery, which is the wrong direction. But basically, they capture carbon, they pump it into the ground, they get more oil out of a depleted well. However, Sheldon Whitehouse, the senator from Rhode Island, caught news of this, and he actually added a rider, a clause that basically gave – a tax credit to air capture, direct air capture. We know this technology exists and that we can take carbon right out of the air and we can make it into very useful materials like carbon fibers and bubbles in soda water and any number of other things, greenhouses to grow plants, etc. And that that now, actually, believe it or not, we have a price on carbon. Okay. Go figure. That's something that Trump actually did. I don't think he knew he was doing it, but he did it.
That's 45Q.
45Q. Look it up. There's a great article in Forbes magazine on that.
Okay.
So this is a mechanism that allows the big investors on Wall Street to actually utilize these tax credits and drive that industry forward. Well, we've been promoting global thermostat at the R Day for 10 years, and this is a technology that exists. You know, I've been to the plant out at Stanford Research Institute, and we know for a fact that we can do this. And we also know that we can sequester that carbon in the ground, because the bad news of this is that we've put so much up since the dawn of the Industrial Revolution to the tune of 2 trillion tons. So the science tells us that we have to take out half of that, which is 1,000 gigatons, in order to stabilize the atmosphere and have a chance of going back down to about 350 and maybe even lower as we begin to do that. Now, but in the doing, we'll create an incredible global economy. But how do we get from here to there? I mean, that's really what we're talking
about. Plus, if we're taking it out of the air, I mean, 45Q is great, but we're continuing to put it in the air. It's not like we've stopped putting CO2 in the air and we're taking it out, and that's great. It's like, I'm wondering, how will it balance out? Will it really be effective?
Well, that's exactly the problem, Amy. I mean, since you and I were born, when there was probably about, you know, 3.5 billion people on the planet, now there's 7.5. That's 55 Chevy, baby. You know, we're talking about the big burn. You know, between 55 and 75 is when we had no catalytic converters and we were just manufacturing, and there was no pollution controls on the stacks to burn the coal, to provide the electricity. And that's the engines. Now, those feedback loops that from the carbon that we put up in 1955, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, all throughout the 60s and the 70s, they're coming back to haunt us now. And there's no science that understands what that is. There's no class in the universe. There's models, lots of models, but nobody teaches a course on what is the feedback loop when we add, today we're adding another 140 billion tons of carbon per year on top of last year's, in aggregate as a 7.5 billion world of humans. So, but let me give you some really hopeful.
Before we get to that, and I just want to remind listeners that it's 4:44. You're listening to Valley Voices. I'm Amy Haddon Marsh. My guest today is Chip Cummins, who is the founder of the American Renewable Energy Institute and founder and CEO of RDAE, which is coming up next month in Snowmass. You know, it sounds like when you're talking about this stuff, it sounds like great stuff that are some of these, the bigger solutions, you know, some of the legislation, et cetera. What business, big businesses can do. What about us? Those of us who aren't big business, who aren't government, municipalities, you know, is taking public transportation, changing light bulbs, composting, recycling, driving electric cars. Is that enough?
It's all of those and it's more. I think that it's a really changing a mindset, you know. A couple of things
it's
I want.
It's a paradigm shift.
It's a paradigm shift. So I'd like to mention two things in the Valley that are very important along those lines. First one is a friend of mine has created something called the Open Mind Project.
Right. I took a look at that.
Andrew Scott. And that organization is very heavily involved in this paradigm shift. And they talk about now, as in, you know, like, let's create the nowist movement, you know, nowism, right? Mm-hmm. Like, there's only now. There's not, you know, there's no past, there's no future. There's just right now.
Like,
and it's
mindfulness.
Always, right. It's like mindfulness, exactly, being present. So if we can be present in the choices that we make every single moment, you know, what are we going to do? How are we going to do it? How do we think? How do we act? And then another one I want to mention that's also very important. I really think that the organization that Gina Murdoch founded up in Aspen, Lead with Love. I just love that concept. You know, can we lead with love? Can we open our hearts to leadership, and can we make decisions based from that place? And you couple mindfulness with love. Now we're getting somewhere in terms of, can we choose energy sources that help us and don't hurt us? And can we demand that from our corporations, from our politically elected leaders? But let's talk about what's really practical. Okay. You know, let's talk about how to become resilient in local community in the town of Carbondale, as an example. Or Basalt, or Aspen, or Glenwood, you know, and that really comes down to some of the leadership that we're seeing by, say, Ed and Vardy over there at Aspen Tree, where he's hard at work showing us how we can grow our own foods, or Jerome Canty up there at Crimpy,
or Brooke Levan
right down here at Sustainable Settings. There's three great examples of how we can bake in some resilience. And let's not forget the ranching community in this valley, like Kate McBride with what she's doing over there in Old Snowmass, and then the Nice Lanik family that's holding on to, you know, these traditional ways of being on the earth where we're supporting ourselves locally. So I think local resilience is a really, really important thing to talk about. And within that context, then you have the opportunity to talk about regeneration, how we can build our soils and not deplete them. And these strategies will begin then to expand. But as you know, because I saw you at Ed Masuria's talk last week, that, you know, 70% of the world's population lives in an urban environment.
That's right. He was talking about how urbanization is taking over the planet.
So
those
5 billion
his words, but...
Well, so 5 billion people of the 7.5 live in cities, right? And they are responsible for 75% of the carbon throughput. So we can't solve this from a rural perspective. I mean, it helps to become resilient, when, especially when we are rural livers, or at least, you know, sort of rural. But
the exurbs.
but can we come up with the kinds of strategies that Ed was talking about in terms of the retrofit of the built environment? You know, so now we're talking about vertical farming and skyscrapers. We're talking about creating water from the air, which we know we can do that too. So it's an extraordinary moment. It's going to be a great, it's a great leap in consciousness. It's a great evolution in what's happening with human ingenuity in terms of how the solutions that are required are actually technically achievable. And then that's where I was getting back earlier on the comments about how we can do that through a very voluntary approach, where each and every one of us chooses to pay, let's say, a carbon tax on our footprint, and we put that into a new body, and maybe we can generate tens of trillions of dollars that then can be deployed in a new mechanism that hasn't even been invented yet. It's not, you know, it's no sovereign bank, it's no sovereign government, it's not the UN. It's something that the people of the earth will in fact bring upon. And
it's evolution.
I think so. It's wonderful. It's an evolutionary.
We only have a few minutes left. We have about 5 minutes left in this show. It always goes fast, especially with you. But I, you know, I want to talk a little bit about what people can expect up at Snowmass next month. First of all, I want to check out the speakers. My favorite is Captain Paul Watson of the Sea Shepherd Conservation Society. I mean, I interviewed him and went along on a mission as a journalist in 1990 out of Key West to chase Taiwanese fishing boats. But I think the man is truly a force to be reckoned with. Why did you choose Watson for one of this year's speakers?
Well, you know, I've met Paul a few times, but I was so impressed with what I saw him do down in Dallas. And his leadership is fabulous, getting between the whale and the gunner and all of the things like that over there at the Sea Shepherd. And of course, he's one of the founders of Greenpeace back in the day.
Well, he doesn't really like to be associated with that anymore.
Well, be that as it may, he still was. And and that's, you know, then resulted in, they have 11 ships around the world. And and in fact, we're showing a film that everybody should see as part of Impact Film that ends up the week. And Impact Film is on Friday and Saturday. That'll be June 22nd and 3rd. We start on Monday the 18th, and we'll back up and go through that. But the film is called Chasing the Thunder, and this is about the Patagonian toothfish illegal fisher that they chased down for 6 months. And then I'm not going to give away, you know, the ending, but what happens is quite extraordinary on this chase on the high seas for that many months that are dedicated from one of the ships of Paul Watson's.
Sea Shepherd, it's exciting to be out there with
really
him,
is.
I'll say.
Yeah.
And you've got another, keeping with the ocean theme, because I know that's one of the big themes with Art Aid this year, Jean-Michel Cousteau will be joining Art Aid's roster. His work is a little different than Watson's. Talk about his work.
Well, you know, Jean-Michel is, you know, carries the legacy of Jacques Cousteau in the undersea world, and, you know, the inventor of the aqualung. And we all grew up watching, you know, certainly I did, on PBS. And You know, and so Jean-Michel brings that whole conversation forward. He's been working extensively in the South Pacific, mm-hmm. And he'll be talking about some of those things. But I'd also like to include, while we're on it, Sylvia Earle, mm-hmm. who's my absolute top heroine on the planet, her deepness, and she, you know, is dedicated to Mission Blue and the hope spots right. in the ocean, mm-hmm. you know. Mm-hmm. As Sylvia says, I'll quote her, you know, no blue, no green.
Right. That's so great. I love it. Yeah, I love it.
You know, 75% of the planet is the mother ocean. Mm-hmm. And, of course, we have many, many others. I'm very excited about Paul Hawken joining us mm-hmm. with Drawdown and the 100 methods that we have to draw down the carbon from the atmosphere. Mm-hmm. And he'll be talking about that. By the way, we have local passes. They're only available at registration at the Viceroy Hotel. Okay. There's no Wheeler this year.
Okay.
They're $350 for the locals. Mm-hmm. It's a $1,250 ticket for, mm-hmm. you know, list price. So it's mm-hmm. a significant discount.
No kidding.
If to come for the whole 4 days. And we're going to have, you know, keynotes and armchairs and panels. And then in the evening, we're going to have a movie. The first night is The Last Animals, which is about the extinction crisis that's happening in Africa.
Oh.
And that's produced by Kate Brooks, a frontline war photographer who then went on to make this film over the last mm-hmm. 5 years. Tuesday night will be James Balog will be with us, Chasing Ice, and now mm-hmm. he's got his new film right. called The Human Element. Mm-hmm. We have a big concert that we're putting on.
Who's the musical guest?
Oh, it's great. Well, that's secret, but okay. we have an incredible band called Brothers Keeper.
Oh, right.
And that features Jeff Pivar, who was Jackson Browne's lead guitar player, mm-hmm. and he played with David Crosby. So that's going to be a killer show. They played last year with John Popper, but this year it's special guests, but it's going to be good, guys. I'm just going to... Come on out. It's a free concert. We're also going to have an expo that you'll be able to go and see some of the great solution-oriented local solutions that are being presented. And we have Arde Electric, which is an electric vehicle display. So you can go and test drive a Chevy Volt, as an example. I think that's almost all of it. There's probably a few things I'm forgetting. But
people can go to your website is Arde, that's ARE.net. And Arde is June 18th through the 23rd at Snowmass Village. And you can register at Arde.net.
Correct.
Is that correct? Mm-hmm. And it's going to be fabulous. I mean, the main theme this year, the title of the event is Global Security, Conservation Capitalism, and Regeneration, Whole System Solutions to Climate Change. And it's going to be fantastic. And we are just about out of time. We have about a minute left. What would you like to add?
I would like to add one very critical, important point. We're going to have two cutting-edge panels on the blockchain and on cryptocurrency as it's applied to renewable energy and a new form of financing renewable energy. Nobody understands what it is, but it's happening, folks. These ICOs, initial coin offerings, are happening. Hundreds of millions of dollars have been raised, mm-hmm. and that's a way of us being able to a new form of financing. Siemens company is actually using the blockchain to build a utility in Brooklyn. Okay, so the big players are coming in. Come up to Arde and learn about that. We have some of the biggest players in the business. Bill Tai is coming. Peter Hirschberg with Switch. These guys are the leaders of that.
And they'll be talking about how these cryptocurrencies use a lot of energy.
And how we can offset that with renewables.
All right. That's what we need to know. And we're going to have to leave it there. Chip Cummins, founder of the American Renewable Energy Institute and founder and CEO of Arde, congratulations on 15 years. And thanks so much for taking time from your busy schedule to come on in and talk to us.
Lots of gratitude and love, Amy.
You bet. Take care. You've been listening to Valley Voices. Stay tuned for Pulse of the Planet and All Things Considered, KDNK Local News. Thanks for listening.